get started here. So we need to call the roll.
Terry Brown. Thomas Boynton. Judy Dolorosa is excused. Greg Fagan.
Here.
David Flanagan.
Here.
Richard Gonzalez.
Here.
Marsha Harvey. Glenn Harvey.
Here.
Tino Pena.
Here.
Myron Newman.
Here.
Dick Verduin.
Here.
We have a call, Mr. Chair.
Okay, great, thank you. We need a motion to adopt our agenda for today.
If I may, I have to leave at 3:00. I have a couple of comments I'd like to make in the member comment section. And I wonder if we can move the member comment section up.
I'll make a note here too.
So moving 4A up to, say, after F? After our public comments?
Yeah, I would make that a good idea. Thank you.
I think you need a motion to do that.
Good, yeah. So we need a motion to adopt the agenda with that change moving 4A up on 1F.
So move.
Second.
Okay, motion is second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries unanimously. Need a motion to approve our minutes of October 7th.
So move. Second.
Motion is second, does anybody have any additions, deletions, or corrections? Seeing none, I'll call the question, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries unanimously. Comments from the chair? Welcome, Randy. Again, formally, nice to have you here. Nothing else?
Richard, I don't know if you were here October 17th?
Yes, I was, I was not yet an active member, I was more of an observer at the time.
Catching me off guard here. My brain's not working today for some reason, must be the lunch or something. Well, okay, I didn't see that you didn't have the name tag yet, but you did.
Oh, I had it, sorry.
Okay, I didn't see it, I'm sorry. All right, great. The CAC liaison's report.
All right, thank you everyone for being here. Couple of items. So last item, we had our public comment tracking spreadsheet. So whenever staff gets a phone call, an email, a walk-in, we're putting it into the spreadsheet here. And we wanted your opinion if this was useful to you guys. And I would propose that we kind of go over it maybe quarterly. Like we'll just put it in the packet so you guys can see. And then if there's questions, you can raise them up then. But does everyone like this? Does it seem useful? Okay, I can jazz it up.
And Luke, I know it's accurate because my company is one of those line items.
Are we called in? Are you guys called in?
Yeah, we called in for data.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've tried to protect privacy and not identify people.
Other categories of subjects that there were another column. I don't know if there are enough, a small enough subset.
No, I know exactly what we can do.
Like rail so that there were, so you can see that these are all the ones that are about the rail system, why it's open, whatnot. These are all the ones about the airport, but these are the ones about everything. So you could get a sense and integrate across general topics to see what topics are popping up more frequently than others.
So by mode is your
by mode,
and then
or by some other subset of things. Now, for example, we have a really nice and interesting in the transportation alternatives and the local initiatives. They've got a set of categories of things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the thing to do.
Okay.
Does it address safety, security issue, or is it just a maintenance issue? Does it address an equity issue? Things like that. So I'm just suggesting that we think about doing categories like that so you can get a sense of what the public is interested in.
Okay. So I think mode is very simple, and then the MPO also operates under the UPWP. We have different sections where we actually would bill our time. So like the data question would go under a certain category, which wouldn't quite be, you know, automobile or rail or anything like that. So we could throw something together and see what you like, but mode's pretty simple.
I just suggested you think about it a little bit, see what you can come up with.
Question, is this all that you've received since July?
Those are phone calls and walk-ins.
That's the total. Mm-hmm. So we're talking like 369. Okay. So it's not like there's hundreds.
No.
All
right. Man, I need the categories.
Yeah.
Well, nine.
I mean, do you think this is normal? I mean,
yeah.
You do when you integrate across a year.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it for a couple of months, it's
yeah.
small. But across a year, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then their trends
that's
from year to year.
That's almost so.
Yeah, BC is the hot topic right now. I get rail calls asking about neighborhoods and what's happening. There actually is one more that I could add, but this is in the packet, so I couldn't update it. But or there's like one more rail one that I could add, but
so we have two rail comments.
So okay, so I think possibly we'll categorize comments. We'll just make another column and do that, and then so they're grouped together. I think by date is pretty, I don't know. But okay. Moving on.
August was pretty active.
All right. The MPO is hosting a Complete Streets workshop December 8th. And basically, Valerie's been heading that effort. It's downtown in West Palm at the library, correct?
Yeah, so we're doing a workshop for stakeholders. It has limited seating, but we have two national instructors coming down, and we invited the MPO board and our TAC members and a couple of key local stakeholders. And then after that, the purpose is to get everyone to an understanding of Complete Streets and why a Complete Streets policy would be beneficial to their communities. And then beyond that, we also, the MPO plans to do a Complete Streets ad hoc working group with our first meeting in January, and that's open to everybody and anybody that wants to participate. So we'll keep you posted on that.
All right, thank you. This Friday is the Tri-City Barbecue, and who snagged that bag? Did you snag it already?
I did not. It's behind me. I'll be your...
So Melissa had these made. Melissa, do you want to elaborate a little bit on the event, or?
Just the Tri-City Barbecue is an event of the League of Cities, which is a combination of all of the municipal representatives, elected officials, managers, and all. And their typical monthly meetings, they rotate and go to various locations, host cities that host a lunch after the meeting. But because the Glades location is so far, and they probably don't have the budget to host, they have combined that for years. So it is the go-to event for local officials. Probably 500 or more people come. And so we decided to try to get an opportunity for some promotion, visibility, and partnership, and offer them something they need, which are bags to put in these great samples of the fresh produce that they give everyone when you leave. So we're providing these bags. I did the design, and we got those delivered out there to them yesterday. So everyone who comes will go home with one of those reusable bags full of fresh produce from the Glade. So I think we'll be good representation among our government partners.
Thank you. Other news, PalmTran is just their new executive director, Clinton B. Forge, started. So Nick and Renee and Valerie met with him this week. And so, you know, he's on board and shaking things up at PalmTran. So, Tomas, I think you'll be seeing him at all the PalmTran meetings. So.
Yes, sir.
And then, I guess 2 days ago, federal legislation called the FAST Act was proposed, Nick. Was it adopted or?
Conference committee came released by the conference committee to reconcile the differences between the House and Senate approved versions.
Okay.
So it'll go before it goes back to each House of Congress later this week, tomorrow, Friday, for final approval.
But it's a 5-year transportation bill, you know, looking to move on, you know, past Map 41, which is, you know, had a couple of extensions, but. And in other news, Janice Allwood has been promoted to the executive secretary position. So Janice is finally taking Elizabeth's absent spot. So.
Congratulations.
And then with that's my report.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The record reflected both Terry and Tomas are here and present. General public comments. I don't know if we have any of the public that are here, but if you are, you can fill out a comment card. I don't see anybody sitting over there. Okay. Let's go to item 2A. Action items, motion to elect.
We moved member comments.
Did I miss it?
Member comments.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I have it right here written. Brain's not working today. I'm going to take a Monday brain. Member comments. Item 4A.
I have two comments on two topics. One is the adaptive traffic management system, which I believe is operating on North Lake Boulevard. At least I can tell you from my own experience, I drive it 4 or 5 times a week. Traffic is different there now. The east-west traffic during most of the day goes very freely. And if you're a driver and you can get in a Peloton, you can go forever. If you drop back 3 car lengths from the Peloton, you stop at the next traffic light and then become the front end of the next Peloton as it grows. I'm a little bit afraid that it encourages tailgating. But when people learn this, that they can go all the way down North Lake Boulevard without stopping as long as they tailgate, a little scary. The other consequence of it is coming out of the side street is a challenge. I have on several occasions had to wait in the side street through 3 light cycles to get out on the North Lake because it really backs up because the adaptive management system lets the traffic flow. It's designed to make the traffic flow east-west if you're going on Congress, for example, north of Congress. I've been backed up all the way to the side entrance of Target, if you know where that is, which is a long way. It takes 3 light cycles to get through. That's all. Not that. The other comment that I wanted to make was to tell people about something unusual that has happened with respect to the extension of State Road 7 to North Lake Boulevard. This is a subject, you know, we've been talking about this years and years and years. FDOT has been approved to use federal funds and they have submitted applications for permits to various agencies, South Florida Water Management District, DEP, and the Army Corps of Engineers. The Army Corps of Engineers posted a public notice for public comment. And the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency commented. In doing so, they initiated a process, which is the Corps of Engineers permit is given under the Clean Water Act, Section 404. So there is a provision in that section that allows EPA to overrule any decision that the Corps of Engineers makes. And it's a series of steps that EPA has to go through to register It's a disagreement with the Corps in the event that the Corps does something that EPA doesn't like. And they have taken the first 3 steps in this process. This process has gone to conclusion 13 times since 1972. So it's a rare event that it actually happens this way. And it has happened twice in Florida. 2 of those 13 times were in Florida. So that's underway. The EPA has taken, as I said, the first 3 steps. The next step is up to the Corps to decide whether or not to issue a permit. And if it decides to issue a permit, it has to tell EPA. The district engineer in Jacksonville tells the assistant administrator in regional assistant administrator in Atlanta. Everybody knows this better than I do, they can correct me. And if the regional administrator still disagrees with what the board wants to do, but the matter goes directly to Washington, something like within 9 days. The assistant administrator for water makes a final decision. The 13 times this has gone the whole route, the applicant has challenged the EPA action in court, and each time EPA has been upheld. So there's really interesting stuff going on.
Any other members have any comments?
Just quickly, I'd like to say thank you for letting me be part of this team. It's my first day as an active member. I hope I can be contribute positively to this group. And my name is Rick Gonzalez. I am the general manager for First Transit. We are a paratransit provider for Palm Beach County. So thank you again, and I'm looking forward to learning.
Thank you for participating and volunteering your time. Terry, do you have a comment?
No, I was just
we go back.
Any other members of the committee or the public have any comments? Seeing none, we'll close that portion on the agenda. Okay, now, action. Action items. 2A, the time again. Motion to elect officers for the 2016 calendar year. Seeing that? Yes, Myron.
I'd like to nominate Glenn Harvey as chair. I'd like to explain. I have no problem with the current chair. I have 30 plus years experience organizing and managing advisory committees at the federal level. And we always had a rule, and it's good to change every once in a while. And Glenn has served, I think, admirably as vice chair. And I think it's time for change.
I have no problem with that. Agree that James is always here.
We had a rule, no more than 3 years in a row.
For myself.
It's been
a long time.
So yeah, first year was Leo Noble, second was Judy. Third, we started this in the early 90s.
You were still here. And you're gone
over 3 years.
Well, there's a point of order on nominations. Anyone who's a member of the board can nominate someone else. It doesn't need to be seconded, and they can actually nominate themselves. So if we have only one nomination, we can call an election. But I'm going to nominate Greg Fagan as the chair. So now you have two. And if you have a quorum, we have a quorum?
Yes.
So you have to count votes for members of the committee only.
Are there any other motions? Nominations for chair?
Can we hear from the candidates?
Great.
It doesn't mean that the person that nominated has to vote for the person that they nominated. Mm-hmm. But that's usually the way Roberts works.
Do we at the same time have to make a motion for the vice chair? Or
I think you can do it subsequent.
That's next. Mm-hmm.
So I would like to nominate Dave. Sorry for chair. Last name, Rendon. Vice chair.
To who?
Vice chair.
Who is it though?
Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I may need to decline. I have some things coming up that might interfere with some time. Respectfully decline.
All right. I think we should do the vote first. Then. I guess we'll just tally.
Vote first for the chair, and then we do the vice chair. Normally. Of course, if we're not going by Robert's rules, we can do it some other way. By stick.
All right. So we have two nominations, and we will start with Glenn first, since this was first nomination. If you are in support of Glenn being the chair, raise your hand. veteran team, you know, Dick and Glenn. All right, and for Greg? Four. So that's a split and one no vote.
I'd like to respectfully abstain.
You can't abstain, you have to vote.
Sure you can. not in Florida.
You cannot abstain, a member cannot abstain.
You can have a conflict, if you have a financial conflict.
Florida attorney, you're supposed to abstain from anything that's fun.
So you have to vote.
Have to vote. Greg, you want to vote, we'll go for Greg.
All right, and Greg is the winner.
If you accept.
5-4.
I never want to be put in a situation like this, because I do agree with Myron that you do want to change. I don't see myself doing this for another year, maybe two. Other issues, so I think one would be a great chair, obviously.
So you want to withdraw well from this government?
You could change your vote.
I would accept the vote of the members here that decided upon.
Okay. And I think 5-4. Greg. And now we need a vice chair.
Is that a nomination for Glenn?
Yes.
Any other nominations?
All right. I think it's pretty unanimous.
All right.
Now don't even have to update the website. The same thing before, too.
Packets is our proposed 2016 program overview. We've been doing local initiatives now for a few years. We've been learning from our mistakes and some inefficiencies. So this is a list that we are recommending to the committees and then ultimately to the board. So the first bullet, applications are limited to this needs to be inserted a minimum of $250,000 to a maximum of $2.5 million, inclusive of all phases. Staff oversight, we left the minimum off, just so it's clear to the applicants. But previously, it used to be a higher number, but we want to be more equitable with the dollars and try and spread them out some more. So $2.5 million is the cap. A new one for this year is an applicant may submit a maximum of 3 applications, but only the highest ranking eligible project application will be included in the draft priority list. So think of this as a round. So every application will have the opportunity to go through round one, and then if funding remains, there will be a second round. So, next is applications will be submitted, reviewed, and processed pursuant to the schedule shown on Exhibit A that's in your packet. Applications must include all required documentation in Exhibit B. Applications will be scored and ranked via the scoring system that's in Exhibit C, and that's derived from the $20-$40 TP with some modifications. So I'll get in more detail on that one. And another new one is that applications are now going to be submitted entirely online. So we're trying to do it with paper stacks, do away with them. We have drawers full of applications and CDs and stuff like that. And I think it makes it easier on the applicant. We've created some online forms where you just go through and you click and submit and you're done. So. And then, as always, the MPO board has a final decision. You know, we make recommendations to them on the priority list, but ultimately it's up to them. So that's just a high-level overview of the program policy updates. Here's our schedule. The program will kick off after the MPO board meeting on Monday. And we are holding, last year we held a joint application workshop with this in TAP. So we haven't nailed down the date yet, but it's generally January 29th, end of January. But since this is a regular calendar year, it's not accelerated, we have until September to go through to our project priority lists, which is when, you know, you guys will see all the projects. So let me pause for 1 second. So another new thing that's different in the schedule this year is in April, the application presentations, the applicant presentations will only be to staff. Last year, we had a very long meeting with you guys, and we got the gist that it just wasn't as productive as it could be. So the applicants will present to staff, and then, you know, we will bring forward the list of applications like that have been scored, and then you guys will get to see them when they're on the priority list, the draft priority list. So really, that's the other major thing, the major change that's on here. And then the next exhibit, thank you, is our required documents.
Wait.
Go ahead.
There is this, the exhibit C. Oh, you haven't got.
We're only going to be.
Sorry.
All right. So, number one, we are now requiring applicants to come up with a project implementation plan. It's not as lengthy as you would think. It's basically you're picking how the project is going to be developed through the process. So A is a local area participation agreement that they enter into with DOT. So that's when the applicant becomes lab certified. They have to have the staff, they have to have capable staff to do design and construction oversight. And you receive 10 points for this because, you know, you're using your staff to design. So you're, you know, that's how you're kind of funding the design by doing it in-house. And then, you know, all the construction oversight. So you're selecting the construction company to construct and doing all the oversight. And the other reason why this scores high is that it puts the financial requirement on the agency, on the applicant. So in this case, they would submit, you know, say a $2 million project. If there happened to be, if their bids came in and they were over, you know, they could either reduce their scope to come down to the money that the MPO is going to participate, or they would have to go above beyond the match themselves. So it puts some, you know, they have to put some skin in the game. So option B is when FDOT implements on a state highway system, they provide some funding and they receive 7 points. The next option is FDOT implementation on a local street, but with, you know, local area funding, like funding for design and stuff like that. And then the last one is complete FDOT implementation with funds entirely by the MPO. So, you know, you're basically putting an application forward, hoping it sticks, and then handing it off. So, less points for that. And then some other required documents are, you know, resolution support, resolution to commit the funding and operations and maintenance, cost estimates, and other stuff that's pretty much standard. So. Any questions on the current documentation?
Of the 10 points, what is the total point score?
So 10 point maximum in that section. I'll get to that on the next sheet, actually.
Oh, okay.
So the scoring criteria is here.
Perfect.
Yep. So some slight modifications from last year's scoring criteria. Under valid, or we used to give benefit points, bonus points, if you were in a redevelopment area as opposed to somewhere out west or somewhere that there wouldn't be as much traffic. So we've done away with that, and we've moved to this. It's kind of a mileage base for the buffered bike lanes, 10 plus shared use pathways. So basically, you take the number 4, and then if you have a 2-mile project, you would receive 8 points. So you just multiply it by the length of your project. So we felt that was, you know, a pretty good cutoff point. People aren't building 10-mile buffered bike lanes. So 2 miles is pretty good. So
when it says buffered bike lanes -4, that's 4 per mile?
Yes.
So you're
the maximum of 8.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this line is incorrect on this for some reason. But let me set it. This line right here should be here, actually. Sorry. So you could potentially get the 8 plus sidewalks and then 5 if your project improves vehicular safety. So sorry about that. All right. everything else is pretty much in line with last year until we get down to value number four. So that's the project implementation plan. So we're just showing the applicants up front, you know, if you choose option A, you would receive the most benefit points there. For item or value number five, we typically did this in-house last year. We would take all the projects in and then put them in GIS and figure out these numbers for them. Well, now we provided a tool for them to kind of do it themselves. So when they are filling out their form, they'll click a link. It's like a hint. It'll, you know, say go here, and then you figure it out yourself. So we're trying to give the applicants all the tools they need to score well and then to get through the form. So number seven is the other minor change that's been done to the scoring criteria. We tried to clean it up some, and then, you know, using past experiences, you know, we have projects endorsed by members of the benefit area, and then we say HOAs, POAs, it could be, you know, your local school, you know, whoever is kind of close to the project, so.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
I'm disappointed that you still have local support and environmental in the same category. I've said this before, I guess I'll say it again, they have nothing to do with each other. And I think they deserve separate categories. Local support's fine, I think it's important for that. With respect to environmental, it's a whole totally different subject. It ought to be considered separately, and it ought to be considered positively. Not that it's unlikely to have adverse effects, but it's likely to help something or other. Okay? And that will send a tremendous signal to people that there's a concern about the environment.
I think those are all well taken. It's just, through the chair. Yeah. I mean, I think besides a line going through it, since it's a maximum of 10 points, they are essentially each separate, even though they're in the same line. And I like the idea of being more positive, but I think almost anything that anybody does, they'd be able to get that automatic 5 points because it would, you know, they'd be doing something positive for the environment.
Some things do, some things don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look at the LRTB value and see why that's grouped in value seven. But they're both 5 points. Nick, do you know why number seven? Why they're there?
I'd have to look at the value as well. But I will mention, environmental impacts is a broad term when it comes to transportation, and it does account for impacts on the people as well as the more traditional definition of the term, as well as the natural environment.
Maybe
that we connected the two because of that broad definition as it pertains to transportation projects. But I understand your request.
It's like recreational environment, people environment.
Well, environmental impacts, like an environmental impact assessment has in general, it doesn't matter if it's a transportation project or whatever, has like 14 categories from social impacts to endangered species to air or whatever, all the different categories.
Any other comments on this?
A lot of intersection improvements have the result of improving the environment because they lower pollution. Because you have turn lanes and things like that. That's what they do. If you express it positively, it's just people with a different way of thinking about what they're doing.
So I'll give a quick example of why I think this is important. But in Martin, someone wanted to build a new sidewalk along the roadway, but adjacent to that parcel was a natural area and there was a bridge. So in order to continue a sidewalk, they had to build a bridge, but then they had to build some support structures that might infringe on that, you know, environmental area. So it always gets, you know, flagged as, hey, these are potential environmental impacts. And I think in here we just want the applicant to be conscious of where they're trying to propose a new project. So I know you're thinking intersections, and I'm thinking new sidewalk and stuff like that.
So can I ask what the role of the advisory committees will be once the staff scores this? You will present it to the tech and the citizens advisory committee, and we will say, oh, wonderful, or do we, we're not going to vote on the criteria because you've already done that.
So your position will be, I think we're going to probably make the applications, you know, available via our FTP site if you would like to dive into each project, and then, you know, bring in that resource of your knowledge into the project ranking, you know, when we do the draft priority list. So that's the point in time where you say, you know what, I really thought that this project scored higher than X. So.
But it's going to be a pass-through from the committees to the MPO board, basically, the way, last year at, and that was a big meeting. It was sort of exciting because you got to see all the dynamics of all the people working in different areas, competing against each other, and who was the biggest muscle in the room sort of thing. So I thought it was pretty interesting. Not that a couple of the votes didn't go the way that I thought they should go. Mm-hmm. So, but in this scenario, we get to report, and then like Myron might say, we get to rubber stamp it, or we don't, or we do written objections. What exactly will be the process?
I think you guys will be able to build consensus and say, you know what, we like this draft priority list, or we don't, or we, you know. So that's the thing. I think that someone says, you know what, I really read into Project X, and it deserves to be above this one, and put that on the mode, put that on the floor, and you could, you know, inform your other members of why you think, and if they agree with you, then you just nominate to make that recommendation and move that project up. Nick?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes.
I like what you're asking, Terry. I think the primary input in the process for this committee is in this system right here.
Yeah.
Telling us what kind of projects should we fund without getting into the details of let's fund project 3 instead of project 2.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as you look at this, what we're really asking you is, do you want to recommend approval of this scoring system? Or do you want to make specific changes? Myron had identified a concern with one particular area. What the committee could do as an action item is make a motion to modify this. And then we would carry your recommendation to the board and say, adopt it with this recommended change. Or you could say, we think it's good, and we'll see what kind of projects come out of it.
Well, I'm of the opinion that the stricter the criteria, the fairer it's going to be. If we're going to look at everybody's application. And if you're going to do it on a point system, this looks like a pretty good one. I agree with Myron that maybe the environmental aspect could be separated out. I don't know how you would do that. You guys said you would look at that. But I think tightening the process is a good thing.
Well,
of course, we know that politically it goes to the board and they make a decision different.
It's scored separately.
Yeah.
But it would be better to highlight the environmental aspect of a separate column so it gains more attention. And so the detail of the applicant is guided better to know, hey, am I planting trees? Am I building a bridge over a waterway? Because there's air quality, there's water quality, there's human interaction quality. It's all different kinds of environmental. I agree with Myron, instead of saying it's not like an adverse environmental impact, maybe it should be positive environmental.
Extent to which the
enhancements. Even though that is a very subjective
positive or whatever
terminology. So if you're planting a landscape medium and have a bunch of trees, is that positive from air quality versus or widening a bike path for more track? All those types of signals. And it's still very subjective. I think it's up to us to look at the scoring and what's happening there and make that call on our recommendation too. You gotta get to a point where you can't paralysis by analysis, you gotta get to a summary. So.
Well, and frankly, for our purposes, say we get 20 applications, we would expect 90% of them to get 5 points. It's really a weed out type of a line item. that says, okay, if you're that one project that's proposing a facility through a natural area, we're going to give you 0 points. And that's going to be a competitive disadvantage to you when you're being compared against projects that aren't going through natural areas.
What if it's a, say, a pathway through an environmental area to connect a greenway? You don't want to be penalized for that. Because obviously, you have some type of environmental.
Well, unfortunately, you are penalized for that. And not only... And that's not really by our policy call. We just went through our federal certification, and one of our corrective actions was that we didn't identify environmental mitigation by avoidance as a system-wide strategy that we would implement when we pick projects. They don't want to pay for projects that go through sensitive natural areas. So,
what's interesting is when a developer does a large development, they may be setting aside large portions of natural areas. There's a desire for the public or the city to provide access to the public to get to. And that may be something that you're going to see coming up. I don't think you want to penalize.
Well, and to your point earlier, you said it was ambiguously worded, which means it's a little bit subjective on our side. That's intentional.
Right.
Because it's a difficult item to evaluate qualitatively in a scoring system. So, I think we want to have a criteria that says environmental impacts are important as part of the evaluation of a project, but we want to retain enough subjectivity that we can get into the details of a project and decide whether or not it deserves to be given 0 points. So if it has a value, as you're describing, in that nuanced scenario, then maybe we would say it's not likely to have those types of adverse impacts that would penalize it.
Do you think it's possible to word that in either a neutral or a positive way? I mean, can you say something like the extent to which the environmental impacts are beneficial, or I mean, some you know, unlikely to be adverse? It seems just to send the wrong signal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other question is, the lowest you can go is zero, right? Can you go negative?
No.
Oh, that's a good point.
I mean, the key is that this says five would say it didn't have any adverse effect. But what if you had a positive effect on the environment? What I'm saying is, if you have two projects, one has an adverse effect and one has a positive effect, what would be the difference in scoring?
I don't know. We're kind of wandering into a lot of specificity without specifics. So the only answer I could give is we would make a subjective call when we saw the two projects side by side.
But what I'm saying is, if you only had those two projects, then one had an adverse effect and one had a positive effect, what scores would you give to each of those projects? Because you're saying that without an adverse effect, you give a zero.
Yeah.
And with a positive effect, you give a zero also.
No, I think a positive effect would get 5 points.
Okay.
It's the absence of a negative, so it would get the 5 points. You guys can suggest a change. You can say, hey, has a positive effect, gets five. Has a neutral effect, gets three. Has an adverse effect, gets zero. The challenge for us is we don't do an environmental analysis when these applications come in. So it's a very speculative criteria.
By local initiatives,
that's
program.
That's right. I'm not asking for an environmental program.
Some of the positives could be captured under other categories too, like if project mitigates impact of sea level rise or provides connectivity for biped or things like that, that could, you know, subjectively be captured under positive. But I kind of agree with the separating out, like not changing the scoring, but separating a separate line item just for environmental versus local support, because they are two different topics.
It calls the attention to the fact that there is an environmental
says project improved performance of hurricane evacuation route. Are those the hurricane evacuation routes in the emergency management plan, or just what people say is the emergency evacuation route? You're talking about the formal
evacuation route? We would use the counties.
Evacuation route.
We would use the counties.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, it's...
A 1 and 6, there is a deadline.
Yeah.
All right. I think we need to move on here. We need a motion to recommend approval.
With the changes.
With the modification, why are we recommending?
Changes pulling out environmental as a separate line.
And just so you know, in the table, okay, SC6 is up there.
So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion in a second. Any further comments?
Yes.
Sure. For item number 7 that we're separating, I think the suggestion made by Nick is very good to maybe, you know, have the categories where if it's positive, then you get the full score. If it's a neutral, you get a 3. And if it's a negative, you get a 0, just for clarity.
Okay. And your second? For that clarification?
I'll second that.
Okay. All right.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, I didn't want to put this to bed. I mean, my understanding through the point system was the one on the far right is your maximum points, but is it all or nothing then? Is that what we're saying for all the other categories? Because I always thought with the point scoring, it would be up to the judge.
It would be up to that. It would be 0 or 5, 0, 2, 5, whatever they feel.
And this
which
is
for all the categories, correct?
It's like for the bottom one, so probably reduces transit travel time between travel hubs. It's a 4 or nothing, so there's no in between. But
Okay.
So if the environmental line were revised to be positive, has a positive effect on the environment, you get 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a negative, you get 0. But the judgment of the reviewers can give it something between 0 and 5 if it's neutral or something like that. So is that correct? Is that the?
I think we
stood
with 3.
That's how I understood it. That's how I understood it.
Yeah.
Because it's very subjective. Whoever's going to do the review is going to be very subjective. So
I think Team U's motion was to change this one to basically have multiple values, so 5 to 3, and then the 0, basically, correct? So there's still a maximum of 5 at this juncture?
Yes.
5, 3, or 0?
Well,
okay.
It could be 2 and 4 also.
Well, that's not the way that we typically do it.
You get it, you know.
Yeah, like for the other ones, we haven't just lined out if there are available values.
So the report is, you don't want to make a judgment between 0 and 5.
Exactly.
You want to give strict guidance.
Yes.
Okay, 0, 3, and 5, sorry.
We got it.
Okay.
You got to do that.
Okay.
All right, call the question.
Good.
Yes.
All right, you need...
Nope, I was going to clarify after the motion.
Okay. Call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
And then item 7 in our LRTP is called Economic Development / Environmental Steward, so that's why environment, and then that one was in there, so... But just FYI.
Okay. We're on to 2C. Motion to recommend approval of the transportation alternatives program guidelines and scoring systems.
All right. Francesca Taylor, our bike type player, will present this item.
Good afternoon. So, we presented similar information. This is in reference to our transportation alternatives program, which specifically funds non-motorized transportation projects. The cap for funding is between $250,000 to $750,000. That remains the same, but I will highlight a few things that are changing this year. One, we will be requesting that the applicants submit their applications online via our website. We have a screenshot of that. And we'll have a workshop to cover in depth more of the application process and May 5th, the applicants will present to the BGPAC. Staff will assign values of score each project, and BGPAC has the ability to re-rank that score. After FDOT comes back with the eligibility determinations, the committee again has the ability to submit the final ranking. Required documents. So similar to the local initiatives program, we have a few required documents, the project implementation plan. So we really just want people to let us know how they intend to construct the project and how much of their funds will be allocated to the project. We'll give more benefit, or there's greater benefit to those applicants who will be using a share of their own funds for the project, as Luke mentioned before. Again, we're also asking for a resolution from the facility owner, just to make sure that we know that the person who owns the actual facility is on board with the project. We don't want any surprises. And additionally, we'll ask for a resolution of support from the project applicant, which touches into the local or public involvement process. And lastly, our scoring system. So the scoring system is a little bit different. Of course, we want to tailor towards non-motorized transportation and then also transit. So previously, our BGPAC committee had, I'll say, a less qualitative process for scoring. So we wanted to be able to really put quantifiable numbers towards some things that we're asking for. So for instance, a lot of the things at the top kind of stay the same, but scroll up just a little bit. Proximity benefit. This was something that was kind of given some priority in our previous scoring system, and we wanted to make sure that it remained the same in this system. So applicants will get points for your proximity near school, near transit hubs, I'm sorry, near school, near shopping center, and recreational centers. That's kind of a carry forward from our previous scoring criteria. I believe that's the bulk of the information. I think we also have a glossary of terms for clarification on any of those items mentioned. Any questions?
I'll make the same comment about category 7. There is no category 8, so it would be real easy to break it up.
it's this number. Should only go to 10.
Any questions or comments by members of the committee? Need a motion?
Well, let me ask, is there some reason why it can't be broken up?
You make the motion.
I think that the number 7 should be divided into two separate categories, one for local support and one for environment, because they're just two different topics.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. A motion.
Second.
Dick. Any other comments, questions by members? Seeing none, I call a question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. For the Safer People, Safer Streets Initiative.
Valerie Nielsen, Principal Planner, Dan Planner.
So earlier this year, we encouraged our local municipalities to join this challenge for Safer People, Safer Streets from the Department of Transportation. It's a one-year challenge. It started in March, but it was titled for mayors. Recently, we found out that MPOs can join as well, Broward MPO join. And really it's a saying that we support safer people, safer streets, that we're working towards actions and promoting complete streets, so those types of initiatives. So it's not too late for us to join because the challenge ends in March. So we wanted to be a part of this national challenge over 200 different jurisdictions, municipalities, and government entities have joined around the nation. So this is just a resolution to say that we are on board.
Is there a prize for winning the challenge?
There's not really it's not really a competition. It's more just a Secretary Fox and I challenge all of my, country to stand behind safer people, safer streets.
Prize.
Yes.
Prize.
Your name on the national list.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me make a motion for comments. A motion.
Second.
Motion to approve.
To approve.
Yeah. Tomas.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Seeing none, call in the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. On item 2E, Palm Beach County portion, the Regional Greenway and Trails Plan.
Remix is a completely web-based transit planning platform that is used by over 60 transit agencies across North America. The main benefit of Remix is to take your existing processes and make them faster and more transparent while putting the power of data at the fingertips of transit planning staff. Here's an example. In Remix, you can import existing transit routes, create new ones, and easily modify them to understand changes in cost. Adjust your settings to fit your own agency, and overlay census data to evaluate your new route's performance. When you're ready to see the power of your transit network's reach, turn on Jane to see how far you travel from a particular point within an hour. Then when you're done, simply send the link to someone else. It's that simple. We've designed our software interface to be intuitive so it can be learned quickly and easily by your staff and also members of the public. We're really excited to be working with PalmTrain to help you plan better transit in your region.
Another item I wanted to highlight is TransitApp. This is a free app can download this app. You can use it to easily plan a trip and look at your different options using transit and anything that's available wherever you are. So you can drop a point starting from here and then drop on the map, I want to go here, and it'll tell you all your different options. You can say, I want to leave by this time, or I want to arrive by this time. And it'll also compare it to Uber. It has real-time information. It'll show you bike share locations, car to go, whatever is available in your wherever you are, wherever you're going. So it's a really user-friendly app. So if you want to plan a trip from here to Miami or Broward, it'll take you across the different agencies and say, you know, take this to us, get off in 7 minutes, get on the Tri-Rail, get off, take 4 hour transit. It'll sync everything for you. So just wanted to let you know that it's now available here in Palm Beach County if you want to use it. And last but not least, the Palm Beach MPO is organizing a Palm Beach Commuter Challenge for March during Florida Bike Month. And we're partnering with our transit agencies here in Palm Beach County, Tri-Rail, Palmtran, also Software Computer Services, DOT, and Skybike to promote this and promote people not driving alone to work and taking transit, walking, biking, and we're going to have a website that's going to have leaderboards, so different businesses will have teams, and they'll compete against each other based on your business size for how many miles commuted total. And at the end of the challenge, we plan to do a culminating event that will bring all our partners together and residents to raise awareness about bike and pedestrian safety and transit programs that are available in our community. We'll also do a community bike ride at that event. These are our partners, and Transit App is actually one of our partners. They're going to help us set up the website for this, and we are organizing a community task force that's going to meet monthly with anybody and everybody that wants to help us spread the word, wants to help participate, and our first meeting is December 17th in downtown West Palm Beach, so if anyone's interested, let me know, and I'll add you to the list to keep you in the loop, and if you can make our meetings, and we hope all of you will participate. This is actually a bus route that we plan to do with Palmtran, and we plan to do an unveiling event at our MPO board rolling retreat on January 21st. So we'll, if all goes as planned, we'll get on this bus and we'll go on our rolling retreat. So you'll be, keep an eye out for it here in Palm Beach.
Thank you.
So
you
can be
crushed,
right?
Mm-hmm.
An HIV team that doesn't have to be
It's as long as you're, yeah, you're commuting to
your
old
Westside.
Are there any comments from members of the committee? None. We'll go on to the next information item, the State Road 8 Corridor Action Plan.
Good afternoon. I'm Jessica Jocelyn with Kittleson and Associates. I'm the consultant project manager of the State Road 80 Corridor Action Plan. I'm here today to introduce the study and what we're proposing to do over the next 2 years related to this facility. Before I get into the presentation, I wanted to introduce Miguel Vargas. He is the project manager from the Florida Department of Transportation District 4. So he will be our fearless leader over the next 2 years. And then I also have Mr. Randy Whitfield, that some of you know from his past life at the MPO here. He is our principal on the project, given his history and familiarity with the corridor and county. He's been critical for the project so far and will be through the rest. So this is an overview of what I'm going to talk about today, but I'm just getting a pulse of you all around the table. How many people travel State Road 80 on a weekly basis? Okay. And how many on a monthly or once in a while? Okay. So everyone here, essentially, this corridor affects you on some level. So that's great. We're going to look forward to getting your feedback. So I'm going to go over the background and history of this particular study. State Road 80 has been studied and have projects implemented quite a bit over recent past and over the past past, so we'll be walking through why this study today. We're also going to walk through, in general, what the consultant team and FDOT are going to be doing over the next 2 years. There's a technical review committee that's been assigned to the project, so I'm going to walk through their role and importance. There is a public and agency engagement strategy, which of course you all are part of today presenting to you, and there's a strategy beyond that as well that I'll be presenting. The decision-making framework I'm going to go over, so how will conclusions be made for this study at the end of the 2 years. And then I'm going to end with next steps. So in terms of the background and history, the study is running all the way from I-95 west to Belleblade and South Bay. So we're looking at a 45-mile corridor study area, so quite lengthy. And we are looking about 2-mile buffer north and south of the facility, knowing that it all influences State Road 80. There are 9 municipalities that cross State Road 80, and then unincorporated Palm Beach County. So we're working with all of them, those municipalities, as well as county staff. In terms of the background and history, if you're not familiar, State Road 80 was widened to 8 lanes between 2003 and 2008, from 95 to Royal Palm Beach Boulevard. There were also a few grade separations done at the intersection, so this, of course, was to help keep traffic flowing in those prior years and in the future. There is also plans to widen the facility to 6 lanes west of Lion Country Safari. So you're probably asking yourself, gosh, we've spent a lot of money already. Why are we doing another study? And what solutions could we come up with? Well, what we're seeing projecting into the future, about 20 years, there are a lot of developments that are being approved, whether by the county or the municipalities. And we're finding very frequent requests for driveway access in the urban areas on State Road 80. And then we're also seeing these land use approvals being done, which we're seeing about 10,000 units into the future that traffic would impact State Road 80. And we're also recognizing, I'm guessing it was presented to you throughout your long range planning process since it was adopted, the Intermodal Logistics Center over in the west area, the Belleblade South Bay area. So that could generate another 45,000 trips daily to State Road 80. So the Department of Transportation is always, you know, thinking ahead 20, 25 years. So although it's operating okay today, we've invested a lot of money, we want to make sure we maintain that accessibility and mobility and safety of the facility, not only for the near term, for that longer term, knowing all these developments are coming in. And also we want to work with the municipalities and the public for folks to recognize we can't keep approving things the way we are and expecting State Road 80 to be able to handle the traffic. It's not a forever giving facility. At some point, it's going to get maxed out again. So we want to try to stay ahead of that curve, given it is a strategic intermodal system facility. So what that means is it's very important from an economic standpoint of carrying freight and people from the western portion to the eastern portion of the community. So how we're going to go through the next 2 years, I won't go into detail on all these, but essentially we're collecting a lot of data, so technical data that's available. We're collecting data from the public and stakeholders, so working with businesses, HOAs, and general public on getting their feedback, really as a baseline to understand what the issues are for the corridor. Then the engineers and planners are going to work with all that data to develop solutions and strategies from a near, mid, and long-term standpoint. And then once we come up with those solutions, we're going to vet those with the stakeholders, again, the municipalities, to identify what alternatives best meet the goals and objectives of what we're trying to do, how much do they cost, and how are we going to program them and assign them to the different agencies. And again, this is going to be done over a 2-year period. So we started recently this past summer, and we're just getting through the data collection and identifying the issue stage. So we wanted to come to you today to let you know that, one, we're doing the study, and two, the week of December 14th, we're going to have stakeholder interviews. So elected officials were alerted yesterday about these interviews. We've invited elected officials to come to these meetings. We also, again, as I said before, we've reached out to businesses and communities. These interviews are about 30 minutes each, and we have a series in Belleblade on the 14th and 15th. And then Royal Palm Beach, the 16th and 17th. So if anyone here is interested, please make sure you get my business card or Melissa or others. I can get the contact information from you all. We encourage you to come so you can give us your feedback on State Road 80. So that's happening now. Again, we're getting those issues collected.
Next summer, we're going to come back to you saying, this is what we heard from everyone. This is what the data is showing. Now react to the alternatives. So that's when we'll vet the alternatives, next summer. And then from there, we're going to go through and prepare the action plan, we're calling it. So it's going to be a report that has all of the projects, the costs, and when they should be funded and programmed. So this is just a little bit more detail of that schedule, but essentially what is important right now is that you know we're doing stakeholder interviews in a couple weeks, and we're going to come back to you with alternatives for you to vet through next summer. And then hopefully we'll see summer 2017, it'll be all done and things will be programmed, and we'll start hopefully putting shovels to the ground soon thereafter on some of the projects. The Technical Review Committee roles and responsibilities. So this is made up of a laundry list of different agencies, and it does include environmental, it includes transportation, multimodal, safety, et cetera. And we meet with them about every 3 months. And their role is to really guide the study and let us know for their particular areas, what's of interest to them, what are they already doing, what's their concern. So we'll be working with them, they'll be guiding us throughout the study. They're very important. And also it's very important that the TRC acts as a feedback loop, not only to the consultants and FDOT, but also to their agencies. So it's their responsibility to make sure everyone in your community really is aware of the project. We have a public involvement plan that we've developed that has several different strategies of how to get the word out about this study. We try to be as proactive as possible and transparent and really make sure we're hearing the voice of all the different areas throughout the corridor. We've broken it down into three series or phases, if you will, of questions that we're trying to get feedback on. The first phase is what I already walked through, where we're trying to identify the purpose and need and what's important to people along the corridor, and then also what the issues are today and what perhaps they'll be in the future. Then in phase two, we'll come back with those alternatives, as I was saying, and really get the reaction of how does each alternative best achieve the goals and objectives of the corridor, and do you see any conflicts with what your community wants, given the alternatives we're suggesting? And then last but not least, in the third phase of key questions we'll be asking is which alternatives, because we're going to develop a series of alternatives, not just one, but a series. So which alternatives and actions do we want to take to move forward to get things implemented along State Road 80 and the surrounding area? In terms of how we're going to make decisions, this box is very critical. This is the box that it contains getting people's feedback, both on the technical and the stakeholder and public outreach. So your committee is over here, Palm Beach MPO committees. So information we receive from you all will be directly shared with that technical review committee that I was describing to you. And then also same with the stakeholders and interested public members, their information will be fed to the technical review committee. And then this overall box of input gets fed directly into the FDOT management team. So this group is really heavily relying on this larger group to make a decision, because we want it to be collaborative and agreed upon collectively across the corridor. In terms of next steps, if you don't remember anything from this presentation, what I hope you remember is the stakeholder interviews the week of December 14th. Again, it's of your own interest if you want to do them, but we really encourage you to join those. If you don't have time to come out there, we can schedule something separate. It can even be over the phone. I do want to highlight, I forgot to mention, there's a website, stateroad80actionplan.com, and there's an interactive map at that website where you can log your comments. So you actually don't even, if you don't want to talk to me, you've heard me talk too much today and you'd rather do it by yourself on the website, that's fine too, and it's anonymous. So I recommend also you sharing that website with others. It's on the project fact sheet that was part of your, which Randy's holding up, which is part of the agenda package. Next time you'll see me in this setting at this meeting will be around next summer, where before we go out to the general public with the alternatives, we'll come back and show you some solutions that we've come up with to help ensure the corridor stays safe and mobile for years to come. So that is the State Road 80. It was really just an introduction so you're aware what's going on and to try to get you out to those interviews or on the website to give your feedback. So with that, I'll take Randy and Miguel, and I will take any questions.
This is a great idea, and I'm glad this committee will have an opportunity to express views later on. I was really fascinated in the fact sheet. There's a bullet on the first page, a series of bullets. The last bullet says widening beyond the existing gate lanes is not feasible or desirable, and hence a broad range of transportation and land use strategies will be evaluated. And most of what I heard you talking about were shovels in the ground sort of things, and land use strategies may be different. And the pressure for increased capacity comes from land use decisions. So, and that's the knottiest problem of all. How's your evaluation of the program going to deal with those really knotty problems that somebody, you know, wants to put 5,000 houses here, and they will. I mean, it's tough.
And Myron, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I did not really mention at all the land use side of things. So what we're doing, we're actually doing it right now, is we're doing an in-depth analysis of the county's land use plan, existing and future. And we're also looking at the municipality's policies and plans. So what we're trying to do, sir, is by understanding the current policies and plans. Okay, so we understand that. Then over on this side, we analyze and figure out, okay, what are the impacts and what do we need to do to maintain State Road 80 the way it needs to be? We'll then go back to these plans and say, okay, this is what you need to do in your policies and plans in order to get you the stuff that we came up with. So we're literally going to sit down with the municipalities, and as it comes up, as needed, we're going to recommend them changing some of these policies and plans that are allowing them to, now the development goes in no problem, but maybe if they adjust some things, the process will go differently. But as you said, sir, I mean, sometimes hands do get tied from a legal standpoint. And Randy, if you have anything to add, I know you have dealt with this quite a bit.
a big part of the operational aspects of it comes in with access management.
But you're right, sir, that's the creation of the problem, so we should start there.
And George Webb has been going around telling people that if development happens from State Road 70 north in the western communities, as the developers want, have indicated they would like to do, it takes 5 new 6-lane highways, east-west highways, to accommodate the traffic. You know, he's trying to scare everybody. But.
Well, George and I sat down one day at breakfast, at legislative breakfast, and looked at Martin and Wesley, and all the new properties, came up with about 17,000 new units that have been proposed.
That's going to happen, yeah.
All the way up to Avenir, and then he got an additional 1,000 the day before from a project that was popped up, and then I saw yesterday's paper at Roy Palm Beach, so 385 with their old water line used to be.
Yeah, sure. It's a challenge.
It is. And we're also looking at commuter, like the commuter challenge that Valerie was talking about, trying to also look at these policies and plans. And we know growth is coming, and my next presentation is on the regional plan, which you all did your long-range plan. We know population's coming, population growth, so how do we accommodate it? So we're also trying to think through that as well, and providing more options, more reasonable options, cost-affordable options, so that also plays into the study as well.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's about 10,000 people moving to Palmage County a year. And if you look about where they're going to live, you either have them in the east with redevelopment, where there are no current incentives for redevelopment, or you get them in the west. And that's above State Road 7, State Road 80. Now, one of the other considerations is if you think about Miami or Washington, D.C. or New York, there's a tremendous amount of business centers throughout the area. And if you look at Palm Beach County, it basically has Wellington and along the coast. So by putting the people out west, you either do one of two things. You either create business centers out there, or you're going to look at that in that depth of trying to look long term and say, we can't have bedroom communities out west and businesses only in the east.
Yes, we'll be working with the municipalities regarding their land use structure.
It's all county.
Yeah, well, the you're saying unincorporated.
It's all unincorporated.
Yeah. So, well, we're working with the county and municipalities, depending where it is, on looking at the land use plan. So I know already for what we've done, there's a lot of western residential going in, just filling it all residential. So that's not compatible with trying to preserve State Road 80, nor is it compatible with mixed land uses and trying to get different options for folks so they don't have to travel as far. So we need to have those discussions. Yes, sir. We're going to have them. I can't predict what the outcome is going to be, but we plan to have those discussions. Yes. Because you're absolutely right. We're just continuing to cause the issue by the land use.
You're also making the assumption, I guess, on the study that this increased volume of traffic going east is going to dump onto I-95 and not spill over into the city of West Palm Beach and Olive and Dixie, where the road is a lot narrower. And I don't think they could widen that bridge that goes over the railroad track on Southern. And you have to get Donald Trump's approval. This goes right to
Donald. I go way back.
But no, I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of street traffic there on in West Palm Beach.
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody's going to get on I-95. They're going to keep going.
Yeah. I guess one comment, which doesn't really answer your question, but there's a I-95 interchange Southern Boulevard study going on as well,
okay.
And we're coordinating with them. So they're handling the influence area of the interchange because we don't want to double spend tax dollars. So they're doing that. We're doing ours, and we're working together. In terms of east of that interchange influence area, Miguel, I don't know if you have any background on the study limits of why we stopped there, if there's anything, or is there a study beyond?
The area of influence would be because there are three interchanges very close together, Forest Hills Boulevard, Southern, and then the next one, which is Belvedere or Okeechobee. So there are three interchanges close together, the one to the north and the one to the south from Southern. And also it would extend to the west along State Road 80 all the way to Congress Avenue. And then to the east, I think it's just west of Parker Avenue.
Yeah.
So that's the limits of the interchange, PD and East of. And our project overlaps a little bit for some distance from Congress Avenue to the ramps, you know, on I-95. So,
is there a study for further east, like in the downtown West Palm, or not downtown West Palm, but like you're saying?
Well, there's all of
the
Nixie there.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any plan to look at that in the future?
Terry, when we do this, we're just not going to be looking at the impact of State Road 80. We'll be modeling the entire area. And by our buffer extending out 2 miles north and south, we'll also be looking at what traffic might be diverted from State Road 80 or what the traffic is on Okeechobee, Belvedere, and Forest Hill Boulevard. And the 2040 plan, BMPO has some
Yeah, you mentioned Forest Hill. That's a roadway from I-95 to US 1 that needs to be studied, and a right of way acquired there. I mean, that's
yes,
a.
I have $300 into a rear view mirror before, because of a trash can jumped in front of my wife's car.
But we can make note, I think a couple people are taking notes here, so we'll just at least take back to the DOT Forest Hill Boulevard East, and then also State Road 80 East, because I think that's a valid comment. So please go to the website, and again, if you want the interviews, contact Randy or myself, or the website, or
thank you.
Jessica, we also have, a link from our website. Currently on the home page, the bottom left corner on the home page, but then also if you go to the public involvement. So throughout the process, but especially now while you're doing the interviews, we have a page that you can link to, and it has your website connection, fact sheet, and so forth.
Fantastic. Didn't even ask. So. It's all there. Perfect. Thank you.
Do any further comments? We'll move on to the next item. We're 3C. Southeast Florida Transportation Council 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. So it was approved.
I'm presenting this as well.
Oh, no.
So sorry you have to hear
right.
For so long. First, a quick poll. Who was aware that we did a regional transportation plan? Okay, so in general, but I'll try to keep it at a high level. So Southeast Florida is, the Southeast Florida Transportation Council was created in 2005, 2006, and it includes Miami-Dade MPO, Broward MPO, and Palm Beach MPO, and it was actually a state requirement that because we have three MPOs in one urbanized area, that either they become one MPO or that they need to coordinate their plans. So it was elected at that time, the region elected to stay separate MPOs and that they would coordinate. So this is a product of that coordination requirement. Off the bat, I want to say that this regional plan, it was adopted October 27th of this year. It is 100% consistent with the long-range plan you all adopted. So I just want to say that off the bat. It doesn't have different priorities for your cost-feasible plan. It doesn't have new projects for Palm Beach. It's directly consistent. It just focuses on that regional level versus your local. So we started off the plan in 2013 with a regional goal of coordinating a regional seamless system. The Miami urbanized area, you know, Glenn, you had mentioned LA, New York, and that. I was like, wow, he knows exactly where we are in the list. So we're the fourth largest urbanized area right behind Chicago. So we really wanted to recognize in this regional plan our significance as a global attraction throughout the country. And I don't know if you're aware, but actually 12% of all trips throughout the three counties are traveling regionally. So we're calling regional in this instance crossing county lines. And recently, I think that went up to about 15%. So it really is critical that we're working together. And Nick and others really played a critical role throughout the development of this plan to ensure Palm Beach was properly represented. In addition to Nick, there were a lot of other agencies, so all of the transit agencies through the three counties, the MPOs, the DOT, Port Everglades specifically was involved, and then the regional planning councils. The plan itself is similar to your plan. It has goals and objectives. It has a needs list as a cost-feasible plan, etc. And again, I mentioned it was adopted recently. And Melissa was a huge contributor to our rollout event that we had November 6th that you may have heard about. And actually, I'm going to pass this around on Chen. That's the plan itself, so you can just take a little look. So the goals for the plan are very similar to yours, where we're trying to really cross-cut all the categories that are important to us as a community, so safety, accessibility, mobility, environment, economy, things like that. So this really guided the whole plan, these goals and objectives. In terms of what is regional, Jess? How are the roads distinguished regional versus local? So it's a very technical, formulated process to determine what road was regional, but essentially it's your major roadways, so the strategic intermodal system that the FDOT's already designated, your principal arterials, any future planned roadways that are principal arterials were included, and then just where there are any gaps in that network, we assign as regional.
from a statistics standpoint, the green color represents Palm Beach. So collectively, you have your Miami-Dade percentage, your Broward, and your Palm Beach for hubs, waterway, rail, and roadway. So Palm Beach, from a percentage standpoint, you definitely have a good chunk of the roadway miles, rail miles, et cetera, throughout the region on the network. And you know, I didn't note this at the TAC meeting, but the reason also this regional plan is important is because any projects on the regional level can get more money, potentially, get more funding. So it's kind of that extra criteria. If you're on the regional network, you can get more money. So that's also why it's nice you guys have a high percentage, because you have an opportunity to get money to fund your projects. In the plan, we had a transit vision. This was the first of its kind at the MPO level, developed across the three counties. I think you've heard in some of the items today how important transit is to the MPO, and I'm sure to you all in, as a community representative. So here we just have some statistics of how people in the region are commuting and getting to work. So no surprise, a lot of people are driving alone, 78%. And then Brookings Institute did a survey, and we're 9th in the nation for transit coverage, which is not too bad. However, we're 94th out of 100 in terms of how many jobs you can reach within a 90-minute commute by bus. So that's pretty poor. And again, I think it goes back to the land use, how we plan our land. Versus how that synergy is with the transportation system. So recognizing this, all the transit agencies, DOT, MPOs got together across the three counties, got a lot of existing data and information and plans that have already been developed, and put them all together across the three counties to then come up with a vision of what our transit system could be in the future. So this is the result of the vision. The map on the left here is the existing premium transit system. So this is just considering your rail and your express, more high-level buses, not your local service. And then the map on the right is your vision. So it has a lot of new rail lines, has a lot more express bus on your managed lane systems and things of that nature, has Tri-Rail Coastal Link and your Tri-Rail Extension in Palm Beach. So this is a vision that was adopted across the three counties that was implemented actually into your long-range plan that you all adopted. We also know that pedestrians and bicyclists are equally important to the rest of the modes, so we brought that element into the transportation plan. From a regional perspective, we're really tired of getting fourth most dangerous place in the country to walk and bike, so we really wanted to hit home with some statistics on that, you know, 83% of pedestrian crashes equal injury, where in a car it's 47%. So we really tried to hit home with some of these statistics, how dangerous it is to be walking and biking in the region. So we emphasize the last mile component. So the last mile of people's trip is very critical when you're walking and biking. So we did a mapping exercise where we mapped last mile areas through the three counties and high crash locations. Palm Beach, not much popped up based on the threshold we chose. So we actually gave the raw data to the Palm Beach MPO, and they were able to play with the data a little bit to come up with the highest crash areas within Palm Beach, and that was also woven into the long-range transportation plan that you all adopted that identified pedestrian and bicycle projects. I wanted to highlight, as you just saw or heard, and congratulations on adopting the Greenways and Trails plan today officially, we were able to get a spread, if you will, a two-pager, about the awesome plan that you all led into this regional plan. So Miami is at the table and Broward is at the table, and they were able to see the great work that Palm Beach was doing and all adopted it and embraced it into this regional plan. Planning for operations, essentially, at this upfront phase, we just want to make sure we're thinking about how the system can operate better. We're not necessarily building more lanes anymore. We want to make sure things are moving well. So we consider that as well in the plan. This is pretty technical, so I'll keep it at a high level, but we looked at what the region's doing in terms of keeping things operating well. In a nutshell, what came out of this chapter is that the region wants to do a three-county study of how we can work better together on the signal system, on the freeways and arterials throughout the three counties. The needs plan at the regional level came up with about 450 projects. It was just taking your needs projects and adding in Broward and Miami at the regional level. So again, we didn't come up with new
projects. We just wanted to make sure when we stitched Palm Beaches with Broward and Miami that there was consistency and compatibility. This is just a snapshot highlight of one of the projects that was in our regional needs plan, the Tri-Rail Coastal Link, which I'm sure you're all very familiar with. We, like you, did a revenue forecast where we stitched together the three counties' money. In total, we're looking at about $57 billion for the entire Southeast Florida region for revenue in 2040 dollars. I see the eyebrows. So in current dollars, I think it's in the $20 billion, which I know it's a huge number. But 2040 dollars collectively, we're looking at about $57 billion in terms of investments we can make over the next 25 years. So with that $57 billion in 2040 dollars, we have about 236 cost-feasible regional projects that we can implement. And here are some snapshots. The study, as you see, is about 300 pages, so I just have a few snapshots. But the Express Lines network was pretty prominent across the three counties in the plan. We also were very excited that a Tri-Rail extension was on your cost-feasible list for Palm Beach. That was really great to see. Also, all aboard Florida. So we have private projects as well. And then express bus, so the buses in those managed lanes on your highways. And then also enhanced bus, so some of that quicker service on your arterials like Southern Boulevard, potentially, which is right there. So what we did, last but not least, we, at the regional level, we took all these regional projects and we prioritized them. So that way, if Nick and you all of a sudden you funded all your projects and you have nothing left to do and you want to go here and pick a regional project that wasn't funded and you have money you can give to it, you'll have a prioritized list ready to go. For Palm Beach, we had about 23 projects that we were able to prioritize from your unfunded needs list. Broward was 65 and Miami was 72. I think these are a lot higher because they had a lot of small projects, where Palm Beach had a little bit of a larger scale. Size projects. The prioritization results, I know there's a lot of numbers, it ranked a bit higher in the prioritization process, the transit projects, based on the criteria. And that was something that maybe adjusted the next cycle. Some folks liked that, some folks didn't. But similar to the discussion you had earlier on the local initiatives prioritization criteria, it's really hard to come to agreement on what's important, what's not, what's this, what's that. But this year, this cycle, it was heavy on transit projects. And this is just a sampling of some of the top priorities across the three counties. I do want to highlight for Palm Beach, we have the I-95 managed lanes from Southern to Indian Town. So that did hit some of the top priorities, even when you're looking across the three counties. And again, the plan that I passed around and on the website has much more detail on the full list. So in summary, similar to your long-range plan that was adopted, when we look at ourselves as a region and step back, we're kind of all on the same path from Miami to Palm Beach in terms of trying to make it safer for people to travel, trying to live more and drive less. I think that's a great tagline. We're really all on the same page, and it was awesome to be able to see the three MPOs work together and come to agreement and adopt this plan that rolled out on Tri-Rail on November 6th. So it's a great one-stop shop of all three counties if you're ever interested what's going on with your neighbors. I'm curious, how many people cross county lines on a regular or so, once a week? Okay. What about once a month? Or what about, I never want to leave Palm Beach County? There you go. I sometimes am in that, too, if I didn't have to travel for work. But anyway, this plan, it's great to see everyone working together. I think it's only going to get stronger as a region planning our system. So that is it on the plan. It was just more of an information item. The plan's done and adopted at this point. But there is a survey online if you want to give us your feedback. The group still meets regularly, and we're happy to take your feedback. Again, it's at seftc.org.
Thank you, Jessica. Any questions, comments by community members? No? Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, where are we? 3D.
included in your packet for information purposes. The rolling retreat last year was a big hit, but we had some feedback that it was a little too long. So we condensed it down. It's like 9 to 12. And we're going to be in North Palm Beach County this time. So last time we were West Palm down to Boca, or down to Del Rey. And this time we'll be going up to Indian Town, or Jupiter, Indian Town Road. So it's really just included for information. Tag along if you'd like, because it's a public meeting, so public is invited to attend. But we're going to be taking that bus that Valerie mentioned earlier. If it's, it should be done. So.
And if I could just add to that, we cannot require reservations because it is open to the public, but it really does help us for planning purposes if you do let us know in advance if you're coming, and especially if you have any special needs. So
yeah,
we'd love to have you join us.
Yeah, and just helps us with logistics because the bus has have limited seating and standing.
I see there's no lunch on there. You're not going to stop at Harborside?
Yeah,
the music's too low.
Not for long.
I have to read about that one more time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Enough. Okay. Thank you. Let's see. We have summary points of the MPO meeting.
They're included in your package. You guys can read them at your leisure. They just let you know what's been going on at the board, and it's good for that. And then one more quick item since we have a new member. Just wanted to remind everybody that this advisory committee, you know, falls under the rules of sunshine law, so just be cognizant of that. Try not, you know, speak to staff if you have questions. Try not to ask each other. So, just a friendly reminder.
Well, that's only if it's something that's going to come
pertains
to the vision. Well, you can chat with each other and have cocktails and do whatever else you want.
Next meeting is we can make the bus trip the 21st. If not, it'll be February 3rd next year.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Can we get a motion to adjourn?
Yes, we didn't do need a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion second, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carried. Out there.